You're listening to the Eurofolk Radio Network, and this is the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show with your host, Andrew Carrington Hitchcock.
Hello, everybody. Returning with me today is a fellow host on Eurofolk Radio. Does a hell of a lot of work for the station as well behind the scenes. He was on with me on my third show back in February, and my 11th show also back in February. And that's David James. So I'm going to bring him up right now. David, are you with me?
I certainly am, Andrew. Thanks for having me back.
Well, thank you for coming back. I would have invited you sooner, but essentially I've had so many different people on, different guests. And what we're going to do today, we're recording this, folks, on the 22nd of August. It's not going to go out until, I think, 2 weeks after that. But yesterday, I watched the Mel Brooks film Blazing Saddles, and people might wonder, why would you do a show on a Mel Brooks film? Well, today you're going to find out. But before I go through the description off Wikipedia, and I've deliberately chosen Wikipedia, as we know that's going to be the most Jewish of the descriptions, so we're going to give the Jews the benefit of the doubt there. I'd like you to go through your shows, David, your website, your music, where people can find you on the net and find your shows and your YouTubes, anything else. So over to you.
Okay. My primary site is davidjamesboston.com, and I'm looking to do graphic design for people. You can see all kinds of things on my site about that. My blog has some seriously interesting articles on it, including my pigs, dogs, and sheep from Animal Farm. Those articles are a series of articles that people can really enjoy that will explain who the pigs are in triple parentheses. You know what that means, right, Andrew?
Oh, exactly. And of course, this relates as well to the Pink Floyd album, Animals, which is a great album. And also, with respect to your graphic design, I'd just like to say to listeners, if you look at my show logo, if you like, or show picture for the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show with the Union Jack flag in the background and the dogs with the cigars, David did that for me. So, and not only that, but my website that I've been running since earlier in the year, the new format which comes up and resizes on any mobile device you have, it's a lot more professional. David put that together for me too. So that's further examples of him, of his work, and I thank him very much for doing that. So back to you, David, to carry on with you know, where people can find your work.
Okay, you can go to also eurofolkradio.com, and you'll see my Saxon's Creed show. You'll also see my other show, which is EFR News Midweek Edition, which is a growing show. It's very exciting. It's world news. It's Jews news. And it's very titillating, you know, as far as the audience says. They enjoy it. They like to repeat my opening sentence. You know what I'm talking about, Andrew.
Oh, yes.
And basically, I have two other shows, Classic Comparée and the other one is Founding Fathers, which will end on episode 52, and we'll have a year's worth of episodes of Founding Fathers, which you participated in, and thank you very much, with the speeches of Hitler and things like that. That will be ending, and we'll have that in the can, and we'll just be able to use it as we will. But Classic Comparée will be continuing on. It has quite some time to go still, and a lot of people are getting blessed by that show. Also, I'm cleaning up William Pierce's material and doing that on EFR, as well as one other show, which is the Kingdom Identity with Mike Hallamore. We have his show on there. So, you know, I'm responsible for a lot of things. That's all I can say.
Yeah, you've taken a lot on and you're doing a fine job. And I mean, the Comparée stuff is, it's so important, and you know that'll end when you've got everything cleaned up that you can get hold of, I take it. And then, of course, also the only thing about the William Pierce stuff, I've listened to bits and pieces of him, but my problem was he tended to take an anti-Christian position. He wasn't really, he didn't believe in the scripture. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. He's not a, he doesn't believe in Yahweh. However, the Jews hate him vehemently. And yeah. If you post one of his things, this is why it's so important for me to put it up. If the Jews hate it that much, they hate William Pierce even more than they hate, you know, our shows. So that's why it's so, I felt it's so important to put it up. Because they actually, if you put something up on YouTube with William Pierce, they go after it.
Yeah.
They hate William Pierce. And I mean hate William Pierce. And I'm telling you that this man is a clear thinker. It's a shame, but he is our racial brethren. You know, I can't keep letting things divide us. In other words, I mean, he was fighting on our team. Does he know Yahweh? No, unfortunately for him. But the clear thinking that he brought forth is still as valuable as it was when he brought it forth then, in my opinion.
No, I agree. I mean, I read a book, Who We Are, and there were some interesting stories in there, but a lot of it was, as I say, there was that aspect that was missing. But no, you're correct. His name is well known, and he's regarded as a legend. And even one of my Pastor A. Redfern speeches that I put out, He said at the start, he got the news, you know, the previous night that William Pierce had passed away, and he was, you know, two seed line identity, and he still did a great eulogy to him. So I think that, as you say, we shouldn't concentrate on things that divide us. I was only saying from, you know, from my point of view, I would have listened to him more, but I never knew what I was going to get. And I imagine that the sort of stuff that you're going to be putting together, certainly initially, is going to be, you know, stuff of interest. So I'll certainly be looking out for that and encourage the listeners to look out for it also. Now, what we'll do, I'm going to go into the Wikipedia page on Blazing Saddles, and I'm going to read the plot. Now, it says here, in the American Old West of 1874, construction on a new railroad led by Lyle runs into quicksand. The route has to be changed, which will require it to go through Rock Ridge, a frontier town where everyone's last name is Johnson, including Howard Johnson, Dr. Samuel Johnson, Van Johnson, Olson N. Johnson. The conniving State Attorney General, Hedley Lamarr, who constantly has to correct people who call him Heddy, wants to buy the land along the new railroad route cheaply by driving out the townspeople. He sends a gang of thugs led by his flunky assistant Taggart to scare them away, prompting the townsfolk to demand that Governor William J. Lepetamine appoint a new sheriff. Lamarr persuades the dim-witted Lepetamine to select Bart, a black railroad worker who was about to be hanged, as he believes the black lawman will so offend the townspeople that they will either abandon Rockridge or lynch the new sheriff, with either result paving the way for him to take over the town. With his quick wits and the assistance of drunken gunslinger Jim, also known as the Waco Kid, Bart works to overcome the townsfolk's hostile reception. He subdues and befriends Mongo, an immensely strong, slow-thinking, but surprisingly philosophical henchman sent by Taggart and Lyle to kill him, and then beats German seductress for hire Lil Van Stupp at her own game. Lamarr, furious that his schemes have backfired, hatches a larger plan involving a recruited army of thugs, including common criminals, Ku Klux Klansmen, and Nazi soldiers. Bart gathers the townspeople and railroad workers 3 miles east of Rockridge to build a fake town as a diversion. They labour all night to build a perfect replica of their town, but with no people in it. Bart realises it won't fool Lamar's villains. While the townspeople construct replicas of themselves, Bart, Jim and Mongo buy time by constructing the William J. Lepetamine Memorial Thruway, forcing the raiding party to turn back for a bunch of dimes to pay the toll. Once through the toll booth, Lamar's villains attack the fake town, populated with dummies which are booby-trapped with dynamite bombs. After Jim detonates the bombs with his sharpshooting, lynching bad guys and horses skyward, the Rock Ridgers storm the villains, and then there's a strange bit where it goes into present day. Essentially, before I hand over to you, David, just to give people an example of something I saw when I looked at this film, early on in the film, you've got all the locals in this town sitting in a saloon. And in that saloon as well is about five or six cows. And of course, we know what the Jews call us. They call us goyim, which means cattle. So this was a little joke there for the Jews. And the film was written by Mel Brooks, Jew, and Drew Bergman, Jew, Norman Steinberg, Jew, and Al Unger, who I believe is Jewish, I can't comment. Richard Pryor also did some work for the film. He was originally going to play the black guy in the film, but the studio wouldn't have him in it because he was so unreliable, you know, with drugs and drink and what have you. So I know that you've made a lot of notes on this, David, so I'm going to hand over to you now, and you can take us through what you've got out of this film.
Well, all I can say is just by hearing what you wrote, what you read from Wikipedia, what a glossed over bunch of nonsense that is. If only it was that simple. If only it was just a simple, fun plot. By the way, something you mentioned that I never realized, that everybody was named Johnson. In case you don't know, that's a little one of their dirty jokes. Johnson is another name for your penis.
Yeah.
My Johnson. So everybody in the town is a dick, is what they're saying.
Exactly.
Okay? In other words, white people are dicks. Okay? But here's what it really comes down to. In the beginning of the movie, the Jews were implying that the railroads were built by minorities like blacks and Chinamen. But it was done, you know, under slave, like a slave manner. The whites came, and this is the implication. They're trying to tell you that railroads, you know, roads that were, you know, blown out there to make highways and everything, all that stuff was built on blacks and minorities by, you know, using them as slave labor by the whites. The stupid whites, by the way. The implication of this goes on and on and on. I will mention that many of these white actors in this genre are from the genre that they helped kill. And the reason why the Jews wanted to kill the genre of the Western genre is because real men, real examples of white men, were influencing our children. And our children wanted to be like this cowboy, and they wanted to be like that cowboy, and they wanted, you know what I'm trying to say? But all through the whole Western genre, they had built up to this point. And what they had done is, through the Western genre, even though they would show white men who were good examples of manly men, they were always showing that no matter where these men went, there were white criminals all over the West waiting to rip you off, waiting to harm you. All kinds of white evil men, blonde-haired white evil men. And this is a theme that you'll notice in the Westerns. So when it came to this, I'll tell you, the movie implies that white cowboys are stupid and that the blacks are intelligent. That's what this movie implies. Right in the beginning, they show you this.
Okay? Yes.
And it also shows this knight who is killing people for this stupid white businessman, which the Jew Harvey Korman plays. And they show this knight, you know, he's a killer. He's one of these people that chop people's heads off. And he's lisping and everything else. So what they were doing was also talking about how the knights and the white people of the knights, I'm talking about the old knights,
were
a bunch of losers.
Yeah.
We're a bunch of losers and killers and evil. They'll just kill anybody for any reason at any time. No problem. No question. They'll obey. So when this guy comes, the guy gets hit in the back of the head with a shovel. He's a stupid cowboy, one of the ones that are making those other people build our railroads for us, which is all a lie. Okay. He goes back to that guy, and what it says is that whites are evil land snatchers. See, this man was making an evil plan, and it proved that they had no value for life. Okay, one thing that happened is these two, the main actor there, the black one, and his friend there, they both took one of those carts and went off on the railroad, and they ended up going into quicksand. So the cowboys come to their rescue, and instead of rescuing the two Negroes, they said, that cart right there is worth $400, and they dragged it out and left the Negroes there to get themselves out, implying that whites believe that Negroes are worthless. You see?
Yeah, exactly.
Did you remember seeing that now?
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, you see, the reason that I wanted to do a show with you is I remember in a private conversation, I don't know when it was, but your words were that Blazing Saddles was the film that killed off the Western genre. And what I did is I've got the Clint Eastwood filmography up here, and of course you've got what I consider one of his best films, The Outlaw Josie Wales in 1975. Now that was well into pre-production when this film came out in 74. But then you don't have another Western from Clint Eastwood until 1985's Pale Rider. Then, of course, you had that renaissance of the Western when Clint Eastwood brought out Unforgiven in 1992 and won all those Oscars. And then that brought out things like Tombstone and Wyatt Earp. And then what have they done with the Western since? Brokeback Mountain, about a couple of homosexual cowboys. There's never been a homosexual cowboy depicted on film. But I just wanted to throw that in, Dave, and then hand it back to you.
That's correct. Okay, so they say, you know, they say they're a pack of murderers and thieves in the song. There's a little song they sing, and they talk about white men being packs of murderers and thieves. They're white cowboys. And then they show these two white men beating up on an old woman. Remember that?
Yeah.
Now, is that not what the blacks do today in black-on-white crime?
Yeah.
But they're implying that Whitey does this.
Well, in the theme music, the main theme is he rode a blazing saddle, he took on fear and he took on hate. And they're using that word hate about whites not liking having a black sheriff. And
that's
this is back
correct.
In 1974.
That's the whole theme of the movie, Andrew.
Yeah, hate. And of course, hate is what we hear. Hate crimes, hate laws, hate speech all the time. Oh, was that hate? And so they had all those words, David, put together back in 74, the year after I was born, 42 years ago.
Yes. Well, this is the what I will explain to you in a little while is something that I don't understand. But I'm just going to try to briefly go through some of the notes. The word shit was sung in a church song, by the way. Excuse my language, ladies and gentlemen, but that's the word shite or whatever you want to say. They sang that right in a church song, in one of their hymns.
Yes.
And the pastor said it was time for everybody to act, but he was a coward and he was going to run away. A drunk was in there and he gave a mumbling speech that the white people were so stupid, thought was brilliant. You see, because we're so stupid. You also saw the cattle running through the church. You see the cattle, it's the theme throughout the thing. When you get to the movie theater, at the end of the thing, you'll see the cattle running through the movie theater. Not where the pictures are being done, but the lobby. Okay,
yeah.
So the Jews are in this thing promoting themselves as white. Now, I will mention back in the church that we first see a stack of dynamite thrown in to blow up the church. Terrorism. You know, doesn't that happen today? See, these are shades of things to come. Right? Do you remember that when they threw the thing of dynamite in there and it blew up in the church?
Yep.
The implication is these people are worthless. We should kill them through terrorism, which is what's happening today. But let's go further than that. The Jews, like Mel Blanc and Harvey Korman, who are playing white men in the film, are portrayed as fools, idiots. Our women are portrayed as stupid bimbos. And the governor wouldn't know the first thing about governing. Okay? You can see that, the Jew isn't playing himself in the movie. They're playing these white people. And they're showing white people how inferior they are to blacks and to Jews. They're just beasts of the field. So, what you see here is, you'll notice that when they show these women as stupid, what they were doing at that time is implying they were challenging women. You see, women were very feminine, and they were very submissive, and the Jews portrayed them as stupid. Like you saw Goldie Hawn, for instance, right? Remember the stupid blonde Goldie Hawn? You know, you've heard that theme over and over. Blondes are dumb.
Yep.
Right? Well, that was all to challenge these women to educate themselves to be equal with men, so to speak, and start speaking up against the men. See, it was a challenge to them that they used through the media. It was a form of brainwash because they showed. You saw that the governor had a sex object as a woman. Well, women didn't any longer wanted to be known as a sex object or a stupid woman. So by the Jews using that technique, it caused our women to go towards the feminist cause. And I mean that for real.
And also, I mean, when you said about the governor, he's basically got this woman. And I looked her up, actually, and I think she was a porn actress at the time. In real life, and she's very buxom, and she's always scantily clad with her breasts hanging out next to him. He's trying to act like a white man, but he's behaving like the typical Jew that he is, Mel Brooks. And later in the film, where you've got this other supposedly German woman who's played by one of the most, generally these Jewesses, they look evil as they get older, but this woman looked evil from a young age, and that's Madeleine Kahn, and you see that evil, you know, serpent-like face. And there's a part in the film where the studio, because I wanted to see the Mel Brooks interview after the film, and there were two. There was one when it came out in 2002 or something on DVD, and then there was the 2014 40th anniversary special edition interview where it's like 88. And he said, yeah, there was a scene where, because the black sheriff, you know, she's got all these men in the town after her, but she only wants the black sheriff. And she's supposedly playing this white singer who is like Marlena Dietrich. And, you know, all the men fancy her, but she goes with the black sheriff and she makes some comment about the size of his, you know, penis, basically, and how wonderful he is. And then she
turned, was getting to that, yes.
Yeah, well, because he said that there was another line that was even worse than that about, you know, how big he whatever, and the studio were uncomfortable running with that. But, of course, they'd already put that in. So I don't want to run over anything that you've put in your notes, David, but I just threw that in there. So you carry on, please.
No, I'm glad you covered that. The key factor there is she's blonde. The key factor there is she's German. The key factor there is she's a whore. She's supposed to be a white woman, you see, a white German woman. She's a whore who has been with all kinds of men, slept with the whole town, and she's bored of white men, having sex with white men now. She's looking for some new excitement. And so the white man, the businessman there, Harvey Korman, he gets her to try to seduce this black man. And in the process, she becomes loyal to the black man. She, as you mentioned, they implied that their members were big, like as if all, you know, that's such a myth and a lie.
It is.
Okay, that's a bunch of crapola. I'm sure there's big black guys, but there's many big of white guys and other races as well. That's a bunch of crapola, but that's what they wanted to imply to women. You see, that's the point of it. There's your brainwash. Now, after she went black, you knew she wasn't going back either. That was implied, even though nothing was said about it, because she said she couldn't live without him. Okay? That's when he was leaving, she was trying to make him stay, and she told him she couldn't live without him. So you can see this is where a lot of things have started. Is that not Shades of Today?
Well, yes, and I mean, it's, you know, and like you say, I mean, this myth, that this is something that's gone on for years, that they've always talked about the size of members, etc. And I've, you know, in the permissive society that we live in today, and there's women that I've got to know through, and, you know, they'll have a few drinks and they'll say, and these women will say, no, that's not the case. You know, this is a myth. And so they've obviously done that and regretted it, because they had to put up with all the other things through the black man. But it's so, you know, I think that they've you know, they've had their comeuppance there. But yeah, it's that was something that I remember, even in the Airplane film. And there's that scene where you've got that, you know, that young boy dressed as a businessman and the young girl dressed as a sort of housewife, both about 10. And then he's trying to chat her up and she gets a coffee. She says, "I take it black like my men." And just to throw this little aside in, because I saw part two of that recently, Airplane 2, the sequel, and I just caught this, and it must have been meant for me to see it because the credits were rolling. And I just looked up and it had Best Boy and whatever his name is, and underneath Worst Boy, Adolf Hitler. And that was all due. And so they'll still throw things in there about how much they hate Hitler. And of course, in this film as well, they have Nazis as part of the team that try and, you know, destroy
correct.
The town.
That's correct.
And of course,
because they're evil. That was the implication. All that Harvey Korman wanted to put together evil. Remember, he was saying to that whole, to the cowboy, the stupid cowboy, and he gave him a whole list of all the evil people that he wanted. Remember, Arabs were with them too.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? Do you see the shades of today? Now, they were evil terrorists. He got them to pledge allegiance to their evil cause, to his evil cause, right? Hedley Grange, right? You know what I'm saying? Or whatever his name is. See, Hedley, whatever, that was an actress back in the 50s.
Hedley Lamarr, I think, yeah.
Hedley Lamarr. So they changed him to Hedgley Lamarr, or whatever it is. But I'm not going to keep on that. But in other words, he's a very evil white man who wants to steal land and will kill anybody and do anything to steal that land from good people. So what happens is you'll notice, I want to mention something else because you mentioned it, is that back in the 40s and back in the 20s, people like Mae West would say, "Hey, tall, dark, and handsome." You understand? Mm. They were trying to give women the idea of looking for men that were tall, dark, and handsome. And implying that dark men are handsome there. Notice how she didn't say, "Hey, tall, blonde, and blue eyes." Hmm? You understand the implication?
Well, the thing is as well, Dave, it is a comment that Mel Brooks made. He said that essentially it's quite interesting because you had him and another screenwriter on the two different interviews, and one of them said that they were waiting for for Richard Pryor on set because he was going to play the black sheriff. And they got a phone call. He said, "Look, I'm sorry, I'm in Detroit," he told one of them, but then Mel Brooks said that he said he was in Cleveland. Gone off with a couple of women on some drug, sex type thing, and he needed $200 to get back. And so they sent him the money, and that was when the studio bosses panicked, said he's unreliable, and they didn't want him to play the Black Sheriff, but he was still, you know, a co-writer on the film. And when he saw the Black Sheriff, the actor Cleveland Little, he actually said he was pleased he didn't play the Black Sheriff because Richard Pryor didn't consider it, when he saw how black the black sheriff was, that was so much better because, you know, Richard Pryor was regarded himself more like a high yellow, you know, he wasn't black, but it was really key for them to have about the blackest person they could find.
Yes. Okay, now we've got to get to this because we're going to run out of time. I'll probably have to do this as a thing on my show to really go through the full what really happens all here. But what happens is, As the black man becomes sheriff, all the white people hate him and want to kill him. And, of course, all the cowboys are going to gang up and they want to kill him. They're going to gang up on one man and kill him, like as if white men, that's the way we did things, is we gang up on people and kill them, you know, as a gang. Now, we know who does that, don't we? We see today who gangs up on one white man, don't we? We see that in our schools when you have 20 white children kick the living crap out of a white kid. You see, but they're implying that white people are that evil and dark. Okay, so basically, he's in the jailhouse, and there's a Jew with blue eyes, Gene Wilder, playing the Waco kid, a white man who's a big time killer who claims that he's killed more men than Cecil B. DeMille. Now, Cecil B. DeMille is a Freemason. And he's also a famous producer and director from the early 40s, 30s, 40s, you know, stuff like that. So they were giving him a thing, but it's an interesting thing that they mentioned that he has killed more people than Cecil B. DeMille. So they were giving him a little plug there, you know what I mean? So what happens is they play chess together, and the black man wins against the Waco Kid. See, the Waco Kid represents the best of the best. He can just shoot and kill everybody. He could shoot up six men, eight men at a time. He's one of the best of the best, but he's fallen down by being a drunkard. And so the black man easily beats him at chess, of course, because the blacks are more intelligent, you see. And then the black man befriends. They become friends with one another, and the black man helps the Waco Kid to stand back up on his feet and get off the alcohol and begin to shave. And they become a team, and they are going to stand up against all the evil white people. So, that, you know, one of the things that they show is Negroes traveling west. And, of course, the whites didn't want anything to do with them, so they were traveling alone. And also, all of a sudden, the Sioux tribe, the whole Sioux nation comes down and surrounds the blacks, and they let them go. The implication was, earlier in the film, they had said, the stupid cowboy had said, that we wiped out every last Indian in the country. Implicating that, of course, when we came to America, we just wiped out the Indians. That's something that the Jews like to imply and use with the other races against us. So the Indians, recognizing that the blacks had darker skin than them, let them go. In other words, their fellow people that are together against the evil white man who's against them, who hates them. You see? And so the Negroes traveling west, you know, the implication that they helped to bring the West, you know, helped to build this country, always is being implied throughout the whole thing. Okay? So when what was I going to say? Yeah, the whole town is a bunch of racists, as we saw. And they all wanted to kill the sheriff. And they show this, you know, the cowboys sitting around the fire, and they're flatulating. The Jews love to, that's low-grade humor, they love to have flatulation jokes.
Yeah, and I'll jump in there quickly, David, because again on the Mel Brooks bit afterwards, the guy who starts that off, which is the cowboy played by Burton Gilliam, he actually said to Mel Brooks, "Oh, I hope I don't end up having to go back to the fire service after this film," because that was what he did. And Mel Brooks said to him, he said that there's never been flatulence on screen before. And he said, "You are going to make your whole career off this because you're going to be the first person." He said, "I'm going to make you a star because you're basically the first person to fart on screen." And that was what he said. And this guy was joking about it. And he said he was right. I then developed a film career after that. So back to you, David.
Yes, well, there happens to be a guy named Mongo in chains. So it implies that he's a beast. Now, when I first heard it, I thought he said mongrel. And then I thought I was wrong in the film a little later. See, the whites were keeping the mongrel or Mongo in chains. He's a beast of the field. And he's very stupid, but yet he's stronger than 20, 30 men. But later on, what happens is after the black uses terrorism with a box of candy to blow up Mongo and kick the crap out of him with the terrorist act. Hello. You know, now Mongo respects him. He respects the black. He's now on the Blacks team to fight against his own people. Really not his own people, because when I hear him talking, he's talking pidgin talk, like Indian talk. What him know? You know what him say? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it implies that he's a mongrel. And they were treating him very badly in reality, mocking him and everything else, the white cowboys. So now, of course, he's going to join the Black with the white guy, Gene, the white cowboy, Gene Wilder, the Jew plays, right? The Waco kid. Now, soon, this evil plot is going to come and try to take all that land away, because white businessmen are land snatchers and evil, and they had brought all these Nazi soldiers and Arabs and all kinds of thieves and murderers and all kinds of things, and they're all white except for the Arabs, of course. And then they're going to go and take that town away. So the sheriff, the town is a bunch of cowards, and they're going to leave because white men are cowards, you see. But the Black man comes into town, and he convinces them to stay for 24 hours. And that's when they build this terrorist thing with bombs and stuff that they're going to kill the evil white people with. Are you starting to see what I'm trying to tell you? Is this not pictures of today?
And also, it implies that essentially what they do, and this is all the Black man's idea, so the whites can't think of anything, how to defend the town for themselves. They just want to run away. But the Black man is the, you know, ingenious one who thinks of an idea which is so ridiculous. And the idea is to build a fake town that they go to instead, that all it's got is wooden fronts of buildings, not proper buildings, and you'd never even get that up in 24 hours anyway, and paint them all up to look like the original town, and then to put wooden fake people. And so when this these evil white people that are represented by Nazi soldiers and Klansmen, okay, you've got Arabs in there, etc., they're so stupid that they can't tell the difference between a fake town and wooden people. And it's only when they're all in there that they suddenly realise, and that's when they start getting blown up. And so, again, it shows that, the white people there are so stupid, and it's the Black man who comes up with this amazing idea, which isn't very amazing, and they wouldn't be able to pull off anyway.
Right. There were also KK members in those evil people too, by the way.
Yeah.
And the Waco kid and the Black dress up in the KKK uniforms, and they're going to, but what it comes down to is even the blonde woman is now against her own people, and she's loyal to the Negro. Now the town of people that are there are now loyal to the Negro because he's going to help them keep their land. And so his Black friends that were working, supposedly working, that is, on the railroad, and the chinks, they called them chinks and niggers, they were calling them.
Yeah.
And they said that we'll give you some land if you help us keep our land, but we don't want the Irish living with us, they said.
Yeah.
Get it? So what happens in this movie is the Negro sheriff is the leader of the whole picture, and he's the savior of the white race, the savior of this town, savior from Dick's, you know, Johnson's. And basically what happens is the white woman's there, you know, the whore. She's now Gene Wilder, who is a white man, is against his own race. Because they told him his race was evil. He calls his own race those people.
Yeah. He calls them morons. He calls them morons, doesn't he, in that scene? He says to the Black guy, look, you know, these people are just morons. And then the Black guy starts laughing.
Yeah, he said they're just stupid, simple farmers. So what the idea is, there's your liberal. There's your liberal female whore, because she'll do anything for the Jew. And then you've got your white town of people that have now been brainwashed into thinking the Blacks are their brothers, and they'd rather have Blacks and chinks living among them, they, out of their own words, Blacks and Chinese, rather than their own racial brethren, the white Irish. Is that not shades of today? This movie has no There is nothing funny about this movie at all. There was no, I had all I could do to watch this movie because I can see it very clearly what it's about. I can see the indoctrination. I can see that white men and women are being taught how to betray their race. I'm seeing how the Negro, the stupid lie of brotherhood, that they're our brothers and care about us. When we know what's gone on today, that's all dead. If you'd like to comment, go ahead, Andrew.
Well, I just, we've got about 16 or 17 minutes left, and I'd like you to be able to get all your notes out if possible. So I'm quite happy to, you know, for you to go through whatever you've got left.
All right. Well, we saw in this that the black treats Mongo as a stupid beast and gives him a bomb, you know, and he falls for that, of course. You know, the thing about Mongo is he's a mongrel, and that's the way I really believe it really is meant to be. And it's showing, it's the same thing as Israel Cohen, all right? It is the racial program for the 20th century put on film. Why I say that is because in the film, blacks are shown to be intelligent. They're shown to be ready to marry with whites and give the country over to the Jews' cause. We see that the white people are evil and are abusing and using the minorities. But those good white people from the town, the cowards, they didn't mind that the blacks and the Chinese would live with them. You see? There's your liberals. There's your sympathizers. There's your useful idiots. But this is the racial program for the 20th century from Israel Cohen, because he wrote a play called The Melting Pot, which is supposed to put whites on a guilt trip and make them feel guilty about how they've treated the minorities. And from the minority side, it's to brainwash the minorities that whites have always mistreated all those minorities.
And also the minorities are more intelligent than the whites.
Correct. Correct. But there's no loyalty to the race. You see? As long as what it's portrayed to be is good against evil, like good Jew, bad Jew, good white man, evil white man. See, the Jews are all people like Harvey Korman in the movie. Yet he plays a white man and implies that all the businessmen are white men. That's why the blacks call the businessmen the man. See, they think the Jew, the white Jew, is the white man. So they're calling him the man. And they think that it's the white man that's been doing all this to them. You see? And what shocks me the most is I understand that back when the medium came out, when the television and movies came out, I know that people were so, the Jews had an advantage because people were so fascinated. They were fascinated with this media. They were fascinated, medium, it really is a medium, believe it or not. You know, I call it media, but it is a medium as well. It's a spiritual guide. It's just not a good spiritual guide. And so what shocks me is that even through all of time, when you watch this movie, and if you watch it as a white person, and you see how your white race is portrayed, you have to wonder, why would I want to watch a movie that portrays my race to be like this? How could this be good entertainment for me? I call this very, very low, 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 bottom of the barrel entertainment. And if you go back and listen to the description from Wikipedia, you'll find it's much different than what the reality is of this film. That's a sugar-coated thing there, and you will see, why would you want to pay, or why would you sit in a film and watch something where your race is portrayed to be garbage, to be stupid. See, the only way they could do it was in the guise of humor. But I still can't even see this movie as being funny. They did the same thing with Spinal Tap, but Spinal Tap was very funny. This is another Spinal Tap. This movie was used to destroy the white man's image. But they had been doing that all along, much more subtly. This is the very climax of destroying the Western genre. Why? Because the white man was a man, and he was a manly man, and he stood for righteous things for the most part, even though they showed all the other whites that were evil. And so we had to get rid of that example for children because we wanted them to be neat, want to be wiggers, you see. We don't want them to be cowboys. We don't want them to be white men, white tough men. We just like the music industry after they destroyed it. You know, that they started it with that feminine dressing there in the metal thing. And it was implied earlier, but it really was implied later heavy. To the point where it was androgynous again, and then they took down the white rock star because he was too powerful, because he had too much of an influence. So the Jew used the film Spinal Tap with a bunch of Jews in it, including Meathead, and it's the same technique. It's the same exact thing, and now what you have in music is there are no more white people that are in music that are of any respectful value. They're all little sissies or they're whore women. Well, just like from this other movie.
Yeah, all the white people. I mean, you know, the main band that they portray is Coldplay, and they're just so effeminate, etc. You know, the what, and then, you know, all the rappers are always portrayed as the real masculine ones, and they're all black. You know, you get a rapper that is white, like that Justin Bieber now. He does a lot of rap stuff, and he's white, but he's just so effeminate. And, you know, whereas you've got the black men that they are so much more, you know, muscular, bigger built, etc. So it just goes to show what they're advertising. And as you say, it's the racial program for the 20th century.
It also is this, Andrew. I spoke of it on my show, my Saxon's Creed show, Job, The Lessons of Job Part 2, is now the beasts of the field, the blacks, are attacking the white race because we're looking weak. Because instead of having manly examples so that we will become rough and tough men, all the you see all these guys that are doing news in there, instead of having some kind of, you know, gay type of talk like that, you know what I mean? And it's like, it makes me want to puke. So that, like, all of a sudden, all the white men are talking like little fairies. And now the children see that, and they say, well, that's interesting. They told me in class I might be a homosexual, so maybe I should try that out and see if I am. And it's, the blacks are living in the law of the jungle. And they're attacking the old people. They're attacking our children in the schools. They're attacking the elderly teachers. They're attacking the police. They're attacking us because we look weaker as a race. We've been weakened. This shows you the power of media. Because over in Finland, or one of the countries of Europe, they started promoting the fact that women should have children, and women began to have lots of children. So it shows you that if you told the women to be true to the white race on the media, they would be. But if you told them to be true to every other race but theirs, they would be. That's how influenced they are. And that's for real.
Yeah, yes, and I think that the only other thing I can think of mentioning is, of course, the Slim Pickens character in the movie, who's the guy who gets hit over the head with the shovel. And the reason that I mention him is that he was a real, you know, long-term cowboy actor. He'd been in so many Western films, so I think it was important for them to get him in there to kind of legitimize the movie, to show that they've got a real-life Western actor in there that would be a familiar face to the viewers.
Yes. Well, there were certain people in that film that helped to kill their own genre. And they probably realized that after. How I found that out was I saw some cowboy shows, some interviews with people that played cowboys, and they said that the genre was killed by that movie. So I can't take full credit for that, okay? But I will tell you that, you see, I understood right away that Spinal Tap was the exact same thing. See, the Jews, when you look at the Three Stooges, I used to really love the Three Stooges, and you know, I thought it was very funny and everything like that. Even Curly is the implication of a homosexual by the way he talks, you see. See how it was done so early there. But what the Three Stooges do, they're three Jews, and they're constantly interrupting white society and mocking white society. And what happens is the white society gets influenced by them and starts acting like idiots like they are. See, and it's always done in the guise of humor. The Jews use humor to destroy. Now, this Blazing Saddles movie was supposedly a humorous movie. I see no humor in it. I see no humor in people farting. I see no humor in my race being degraded. I see no... Oh, also, I wanted to mention that the whore woman German girl... See, they love to put down the Germans. When she sang for the audience, she was about as talented as a rock.
Yeah, and she was a Jew. She's a Jewish actress, Madeleine Kahn.
Yes, well, that was probably her real talent because she is a Jewess. But what I'm saying is the implication is that she's a white woman, a German white woman, and that she's a talentless whore that will sleep with the whole town and will become loyal to a nigger. Excuse the language.
No, and also,
a Negro. Yeah. They use the word nigger in the film. Don't blame me.
Yeah, and the other thing that, you know, and I don't want to drag you off from any more points that you've got to make, but one thing we've got to get in there is at the end it goes very strange and suddenly it turns into a film set and there's a film being shot next door of a load of effeminate men dancing in this chorus routine, and then the cowboys break through and one of them ends up, and Mel Brooks said this himself, that he wanted one of the most macho cowboys to end up in a relationship with one of the chorus men in a homosexual relationship, and wouldn't that be funny? And that's what happens.
No, it wouldn't be funny, would it? It really wouldn't be funny.
But that's what he said, exactly. And that was his words. And then this cowboy goes to challenge this guy, this chorus guy, and this chorus guy gives him a kiss, and he decides he wants to be his boyfriend.
There you go. Now, number two, let me mention back, I wanted to go, you just hit something that I forgot to mention. Gene Wilder... As he was sitting on the bed with him, he said, "What do you like to do?" The black guy says to him. He says, "I don't know. I like to play chess and I like to screw." And the black implied that, okay, let's play chess because he's not a homosexual. But yeah. The white man was inferring what the white man was saying there was he was kind of giving him a pass. Would you like to screw? That was implied there. Okay, so that was implied. Now, what you're talking about is Dom DeLuise, and it's called the thing was called The French Mistake. And what they're referring to is the French Revolution, where Napoleon was fighting wars until he was down to 15-year-olds, which left no real men to breed with the French women, which weakened the whole race in France. The French Mistake. See, they're not. This is not just by chance. Now, it shows at the end that the Western genre is a joke. They're doing fights, like I said about the Three Stooges. They're just a bunch of idiots, a bunch of beasts of the field. This movie is garbage. And the last thing I would probably say is, the whites love their Negroes in this movie. You see? And at the end, the Negro kills the white man. And what it is implying when it goes from the Old West to this movie genre is that we would not have our wonderful modern world with Negroes and queers and everything else if it wasn't for the Negroes and the Chinamen, so to speak, that helped to build the railroads and came west and helped us to move into modern society. Do you agree?
Yes, and of course, you know, when you look at the film and the fact that all the writers are Jewish and, you know, most of the white roles are played, you know, the prominent roles like the Waco kid played by a Jew, the Harvey Korman character playing the corrupt white person who's a Jew. Mel Brooks, he also plays, when you say, he plays that Sioux Indian that
That's
confronts...
That's right, Sioux Indian, right.
Yeah, and basically confronts the blacks and says, no, you know, you're darker than we are, so we'll give you a pass. It's the white people we don't like. You know,
that's right.
And
that's
so
right.
They throw that
what they're
in.
Doing is showing their affinity to the minorities against the whites. You see the shades? You see how they're implying shades? It's all done through humor. They're implying this stuff. This stuff is reality today from this movie. Blonde women are encouraged to go out with blacks. Minorities are encouraged to go against the white man. The Arabs are evil, and the white men are evil, and we should destroy them through terrorist acts. The people in the church are useless. White people in the towns are cowards. They wouldn't stand up for their own towns. That we should kill the people in the church and bomb their churches through terrorism. You see what I'm saying? That's
yeah.
All implied, and it's all going on today.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing I would say is when you get someone like Mel Brooks, you know, this guy is not a film director. He's been selected as a key propaganda agent. And so just as the Jews put certain Jews into politics and into law and into medicine, they have their top ones that they'll put into propaganda. And this is clearly, you know, his role in this. Now, we've only got a few seconds left, so I'm going to hand back to David to close out the show.
Oh, really? There's nothing more to say. I challenge you to watch this movie, if you can stomach it. And I challenge you to not watch it with the eye of entertainment, but sit down with a notebook and take notes. Use your brain and find out how your race has been portrayed as a bunch of losers and evil people and whores and whatever else you can think of, land grabbers, killers, murderers, haters of other races, and on it goes. This is just one of many movies. I can imagine what they're putting out today. I can imagine. So, Andrew, it's your show. You can do your thing.
Thank you so much for joining me today, David. Great research, great knowledge. It's a pleasure having you back on the show, and I think we covered a really good subject. I want to thank everyone for listening. I'll be back with you all soon. Bye for now.
You have been listening to the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show on the Eurofolk Radio Network. Andrew's book, The Synagogue of Satan, is now available on his website, andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com, in an updated, expanded, and uncensored edition.